Of the Pack Podcast.
The thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay. Just go to their website at TicketKing.com. Again, that's at TicketKing.com.
Well, hello again, everybody. It is the opening day version rendition of Pulse of the Pack podcast. We are in mid-season form already as we're having a little bit of technical difficulties. Jacob Westendorf is with us. We just can't hear him. I don't know whether that is a blessing or a curse, so he is going to dial back in. But this is Jason Perrone, and oh, there's Jacob. Let's see if we've got him live.
Jason, can you hear
Jacob?
Me?
Jacob, are you with us? Oh, there he is. Okay, the floor is yours.
I am here, everyone. Welcome to Pulse of the Pack. I'm sure Jason did the intro well, but I'm sure, as he told you, it is Victory Sunday, Victory Monday, whatever time you're listening to the show. The Green Bay Packers have defeated the Jacksonville Jaguars 27-23 in a closely contested battle that saw some good things and some bad. Jason introduced himself. Like I said, I am your host, Jacob Westendorf, for this show, and we have a very special guest. But Jason, is he here?
Yes, he is.
I'm here. There you go. You just heard him. Our guy, Adam's Pack. Adam, check. Adam, you have the floor. How are you feeling, my friend?
You know, I got to watch the Packers today with the wife and kids, so I feel pretty good.
It is pretty good, and if memory serves me correct, this is our first time on a podcast, and I don't remember, were you at Throwback Weekend the year of Packers-Panthers? So that would have been 2 years ago.
No, I was there for, who was it now? There goes my, the chemotherapy ruins my memory. I was there, I forgot. It was like 3 years ago. Not for Panthers, though, I don't think.
Okay, so we have never actually officially met, so I don't have to feel bad for not remembering that because it never happened. But, Adam, we've talked about you on the show a couple different times, kind of in as best we can kind of way, put together, you know, kind of chronicling your recovery and such as you fight this horrendous disease. So I felt it would be the best way to start this show to kind of let you give us an update. How are you feeling? What are the doctors telling you? Things of that nature.
Well, like I said, you know, I got to watch the Packers today with the wife and kid and kids. It was my four-month-old's first Packers game, so that was pretty cool. So that made me feel good. Otherwise, it's been an interesting last 6 weeks to 2 months here. I had a major surgery out in New York on July 29th. The doctors went in and removed all the cancer that they could see. They also took out 70% of my colon. They took out my spleen, my gallbladder, my appendix, a sliver of my liver, and part of my bladder as well. So it was just a monster surgery, and I knew that it'd be a rough road to recovery. I wasn't quite prepared for just how rough. It's been quite the battle, and these last 2 weeks I've been in the hospital twice for a couple of nights each time due to an infection in my abdomen, so I'm kind of fighting that now too. But, you know, this during this whole ordeal, which started last December, you just do your best to take it day by day and not think too far out in the future. And like I said, today I got to watch the Packers with my wife and kids. It was my four-month-old first Packers game. So I consider this day a very good day, one of the best days I've had in a while.
Well, that's certainly great to hear that you got to watch the game with your new baby and, of course, the older child and your wife as well. She's kind of chronicled your recovery as well. And, Adam, before we let you go, I'll kind of let you talk about that stuff, where we can find how you're doing, stuff like that. But we'll do that at the end. But it's good to have you here. This is the first time, and it's a long time coming, so we appreciate you coming on. And, Jason, of course, I care how you're doing as well. How are you feeling, Upbeat Lollipop?
I am very upbeat, and I would love a lollipop. It was quite a day. It was your typical Packers opening day, but, you know, much like Adam's experience, it's now kind of become about hanging with the family and enjoying it with the wife and my son, who's now three, so he's getting to the point where he understands what's going on. He knows what a touchdown is. It's enhanced the game day experience so much, watching him get excited. Of course, he mimics everything that I do, so I'm going to have to come up with some very more creative language on game days. But overall, doing pretty good. You know, I'm out here in the Twin Cities with Adam, and as he knows, we're slowly easing our way into fall, although today was a very beautiful, sunny 80-degree day, I should say. So if fall wants to hang out, hold off for a little while, I have absolutely no problems with that. But doing well. Victory Sunday it is, Jacob. Couldn't be happier.
Victory Sunday it is, and I enjoyed the game as well. My friends came over. We watched the games. I drank some Spotted Cow, which is always a good way to make me happy. But don't worry, I'm plenty sobered up by this point. So enjoyed the Packers win. But before we get to that, today is much bigger than football could ever dream of being. Today is the 15th anniversary of the 9/11 terrorist attacks, and before all the games today, you know, I had two separate TVs going, and it appears they did it around the league. They had a tribute for those that served, and some ultimately paid the ultimate sacrifice on 9/11 in an attempt to keep us safe. So I want to start there, guys, just real quick. You know, 15 years is a long time. This is really the first event in my life, being 25 now, that I can remember exactly where I was, exactly what I was doing when I heard about everything. I was in a fourth grade class, and I was coming back. I was getting they sold daily lunch tickets in the elementary office. So I had forgotten my lunch that day. I had to pay $2 for a lunch ticket, and I came back, and my teacher, who was Mrs. Ma at the time, was telling us how everything that was going down in New York, and I just remember I didn't really fully understand what was going on, but I did know that obviously this was a serious thing. And we came home that night, and I watched CNN and Fox News and MSNBC and NBC and all that kind of stuff, and that's all that was on television that night. Horrifying. But ultimately, what I think can show how great of a country we can be, because that day I also remember, you know, it didn't matter, young, old, white, black, green, purple, orange. That day we were all red, white, and blue, and we put aside our differences, and we cared for anybody that was hurting on that day. And that is what can make this country great. And that's kind of a day where, you know, say what you will about the politics, but President Obama said before the game, you know, it wasn't a day of tragedy, but rather a day of resiliency. Now, while it was tragic, but it did show our resilience as a country. So awesome, awesome national anthem before the game. TJ Lang told me as much. He said he was proud to be a part of it on Twitter. It was great to see, you know, some of the people, some of the players holding the flag, helping wave it around a little bit as the anthem was finishing up. And, you know, with all the crap that's really going on around the world, and that goes for anything, not just the national anthem specifically, it's great to see a moment, you know, even a very brief, a moment where it seems like the country has come together. So, Jason, I'll start with you. Where were you, to quote Alan Jackson, when the world stopped turning?
So I was in Palm Springs at the time, and I was just getting ready for work. I was being on the West Coast, 3 hours behind New York. So by the time I heard the news, I think both planes had hit the towers. I don't think either of the towers had gone down yet. But just woke up to the immediate report. The first thing I heard the guy on the radio say was, this is the worst terrorist attack on American soil, and then explained what had happened and what was going on. So flipped on the TV, and it was an interesting day. You know, being in the hospitality industry and a hotel business, it was there was obviously a big impact. And we were managing people not able to get out, people not able to come in because all air travel had stopped. And there was just this stunned silence all day, just kind of watching this whole thing. And obviously, you know, we've seen examples over the last 15 years of how life has changed so much since that day and because of that day. But, you know, I think we knew something big had happened, and maybe we had the foresight to know that things wouldn't be the same. But I don't think we really felt the scope of what was happening at that time and how big of a difference it would make. And the fact that 15 years later, we're still dealing with this and we're still kind of fighting this war. So that, you know, and I was in my mid-20s at the time, so obviously, you know, Challenger shuttle explosion and, you know, some of those other, you know, big things, like the Berlin Wall coming down, which is more of a positive thing. But you know, I definitely remember that day very, very clearly.
And I'm sure you do as well, Adam. Adam, give us your thoughts on, you know, what were you doing 9/11? I'm sure your life was vastly different than it is now. What were your thoughts, reactions, emotions, all those things?
Yeah, I was in my second year of college, and I was getting out of the shower in the morning, and one of my roommates came running around down the hall saying, oh, we're all going to die, we're all going to die, and he's kind of laughing a little bit, and he was telling me kind of what he saw on TV, and he didn't think it was real. So I just kind of shrugged my shoulders and, you know, ignored him because he was kind of being an idiot. I got dressed and went to class, and I got in the classroom, and they had a TV on in the classroom, and oh geez, it definitely was real. So yeah, things changed from there. And you know, having spent a lot of time out in New York here recently with my surgery and doctor's visits and all that, you know, I'm not a New Yorker by any means, but I really got the sense of community that they have out there, even though it's a huge city with millions of people. You know, everyone's so diverse in it, but everyone still kind of functions together, and it's really kind of a neat vibe. So I can only imagine how difficult that day must have been if you actually grew up in New York and lived in New York at the time.
Definitely a tragedy beyond measure. You know, one other thing that I remember was 4 years later, I was at Ground Zero, and I went and visited my aunt and uncle, hung out in New York, went and visited Yankee Stadium, the Statue of Liberty, you know, all your tourist attractions, and it's kind of unfortunate to think of Ground Zero as a tourist attraction, but, I mean, it's something that I can remember, you know, as young as I was 14 at the time, and I can remember just every bit of emotion and feeling and just this overall sense of, wow, a big building was just diminished to a hole. And that's what it really is. You know, it's a hole in the ground now. And there was still some carnage and some structure stuff that they had to clean up at the time. And that was 4 years later. I mean, think about it. 4 years later, they're still cleaning up from this tragedy. And, you know, with that in mind, you know, I just simply before we move on, I want to say thank you to policemen, firefighters, our military, and all those people that do things every single day to keep us all safe. You guys have a job that I cannot imagine, especially in this day and age. It's a great thing that you guys all do, and we appreciate it. I speak for everyone when I say we can appreciate it. One more
thing. Couldn't agree more there, Jacob. And just to think about those policemen and firefighters and emergency personnel who ran into those buildings that day. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, running into those buildings. I would have been hightailing it in totally the opposite direction. So just the bravery and sacrifice is remarkable.
Absolutely. I watch those documentaries that come on TV every year, and it's just horrifying to watch the people running toward it, the people falling from the building, just all kinds of stuff there. And it really is just a hard thing to imagine to be one of those people or one of their family members on that day. So before we move to the game, one more thing that I wanted to do was, I'm sure you guys, if you follow PackersTalk.com, have kind of noticed some of the benches had their last show. And before I was on Pulse of the Pack, I was on From the Benches, and I wanted to give them one last shout-out before they move on. Ross Uglum, Ryan Hillsland, obviously, were the hosts of that show. And Ross will be moving to do a different show with Mr. Zach Jacobson. I believe the show will be called After Further Review. I'll have to check on that to be 100% sure. But wanted to thank those guys for letting me be a part of that show for the year and a half or so that it was. We had a lot of fun in that time frame. Had some fun on Throwback Weekend when the Packers played the Panthers. Had some fun last year when I saw them again when the Packers played the Chargers. Just a lot of good memories. You know, Ross, really, without you, I don't know that I'm in the podcasting, quote-unquote, business. You know, this show may not be a thing if I had never gotten my start there with you. And, you know, between you and I, we kind of forged this idea around Aaron Rodgers' broken collarbone. And, you know, I'll never forget discussing the Return of the King or the Batman has to come back. All the different inside jokes. I'll miss the dark episodes. And I'll miss listening to you guys give your analysis every week. But I am looking forward to the new show. Zach, Ross, obviously, you have an open invitation to this show whenever you guys want to be on. Ryan, you do as well if you still want to delve into the podcasting realm a little bit. But I appreciate you guys for all that you did over these years. But that's enough on the tribute side of things. We could do this all day long. But ultimately, the show's called Pulse of the Pack, so let's talk Packers. And like I said in the opening, they won 27-23 over the Jacksonville Jaguars. And the way that we're going to kind of do this throughout the season, we'll discuss the offense, we'll discuss the defense. If there's any big plays on special teams, we'll go over that too before moving on to the next week's opponent, which big showdown coming up next week. But the offense, I got to start with, it wasn't 2014. I get that. They weren't going up and down the field at will and scoring tons of points and making huge plays down the field. There's some numbers that don't look so good. You know, Aaron Rodgers only didn't throw for 200 yards, but the throw he made to Devontae Adams was absolutely ridiculous. I don't even know how to put it into words how good of a throw that is. Devontae made a great catch on it too, and, you know, Devontae Adams kind of had his take the good with the bad kind of day. He drops a deep ball earlier, and then he makes that impossible catch on an impossible throw. The other thing I think was a big story, and Jason, we talked about this last week, was there was a lot of talk about the Packers' situation at left guard. There was a story that came out last night from Bob McGinn about Josh Sitton and how the Packers really, it sounds like, dropped the ball on that. But Lane Taylor didn't – he's not Josh Sitton. I don't think anybody's going to suggest he's Josh Sitton. But he didn't look awful either. He was serviceable. I think that's a good way to put it. He had some good plays. He made a really nice play on a fourth down. The Packers converted. They ran right behind him, got a first down, and ultimately scored a touchdown on the drive. So big day for Lane Taylor, especially considering he was going against Malik Jackson. Jason, what were your thoughts overall on the way Taylor played for his first start?
I was okay with it. I thought he looked okay. I mean, there was a lot of eyes on him. Admittedly, I was watching him at the beginning of the game to see if he was going to hold up early on, just to get an idea of how he worked in sync with the rest of the offensive line. I think the Packers' O-line works as a unit very well. And so while Lane Taylor is one individual out of five, with the attributes of the other four linemen that are with him, I think he can certainly be a big part of this offensive line. And as the season goes along and he becomes more comfortable and confident in himself, hopefully that will continue. Now, you know, he's not Josh Sitton, but last year, and if, you know, if you spend the whole game watching the offensive line or watching the line instead of the ball at the snap, you're going to see every single lineman have good and bad snaps. You don't win every single snap. Some guys do, but Josh Sitton had plenty of his issues last year as well. He wasn't overly fantastic at times. So as far as Lane Taylor goes, you know, obviously he's a big, you know, a big focus right now, but I thought he did really well. On the long Eddie Lacy run, Taylor actually sealed off the backside. Now they ran kind of away from him. So, you know, it's not like he had the key block, but he definitely took his guy out of the play, did what he was supposed to do. So, I mean, I wouldn't put him in the stellar category, but, you know, for offensive linemen, and Jacob, you were one, so you understand this, you know, as an O-lineman, one of the best things that can happen is your name doesn't get mentioned at all. And I think that was definitely the case with Taylor today. I thought he turned in a pretty good performance, and if he can put together a couple of those in a row, I think people are going to very quickly move on from the sitting storyline and kind of focus more on Packers offense and how the offensive line fits within it.
Absolutely agree. Like you said, his name wasn't mentioned, which is usually a pretty good thing for the offensive line. The other thing that this game marks for the offense, we talked about it several times. Jordy Nelson is back. He did some good things. He scored a touchdown in the second quarter. That gave the Packers a 14-10 lead. Randall Cobb did some good things. Devontae Adams a little up and down. And then Eddie Lacy, you know, those are the Packers' quote-unquote big four on their offense, if you will. Those are the guys that clearly have the edge as far as being on the field. I think the only other skill position guy, I mean, Jared Cook, obviously, but as far as receivers, I saw Montgomery very little, and I saw Jared Aberderis very little, but not a lot of rotation. I think all three of those guys ended up playing 80% of the snaps. Richard Rodgers made a nice catch. Jared Cook did a few nice things. Ultimately, not the huge impact that my fantasy lineup was looking for. And I promise that'll be the last mention of fantasy football because I know that none of you care. But nonetheless, I started Jared Cook thinking he would have a bigger day. And it didn't work out that way for me. So that is what it is. At the end of the day, the Packers offense did enough to win the game. They scored 27 points. They had some really bad red zone offense. That last possession was atrocious. But I don't want to go too far into this. Adam, overall, what were your thoughts on the offense with Jordy Nelson back, Randall Cobb healthy, Devontae Adams doing some things? What do you think this means for the offense both today and going forward?
Well, here's my worry about the offense, guys. And look, Aaron Rodgers is an all-world quarterback, probably the best in the league. But I would like to see this offense and Rodgers make more plays where he takes his drop, he stands in the pocket, he throws it to a receiver in rhythm who is open because of some kind of route scheme or something. It seems like the only success that this offense seems to have is when Rodgers takes a snap, holds the ball, dances around, moves around, scrambles, and then makes the throw. And that's fine because Rodgers is talented enough to do that, but you would like to see more rhythm plays out of this passing game, I think. Plays where, like I said, Rodgers takes a snap and in rhythm, sets his feet, stands in the pocket, makes a throw to an open Jared Cook or an open Jordy Nelson or whoever, instead of always having to rely on Rodgers eluding the rush, dancing around, and then making some kind of superhero throw. That's my two cents anyway. I'm not saying that this offense can't get into more of a rhythm, but I think today I saw too much of what I saw last year of receivers not getting enough separation, and the whole offense kind of hinged upon Rodgers making some kind of spectacular play.
Definitely a fair criticism, something I think I saw, you know, I mentioned it last year, obviously, you know, it became a big problem. This year it looked like the same thing, but, you know, the good news I think is last year really being the exception to that rule is the Packers offense typically struggles early in the season, and I kind of expected some of that early in the year because, I mean, let's be honest. I know that they can talk about how practice matters and stuff like that, but it was clear to me early in the game, Jordy Nelson would have benefited from some game reps, and he didn't get any during the preseason, and he didn't get any until today, obviously. The Packers only played two series before this time frame, so not a whole lot of time to get crisp and ready to go. And Adam, you mentioned it perfectly. I mean, there's just not a lot of what I call easy offense. It's in rhythm, it's drop back, the back foot hits the ground, and bang, the ball's out, and it's to an open receiver. There just wasn't a whole lot of that. It was, like you mentioned, Rodgers is as good as it gets as far as improvising and making superhuman throws, and the Devontae Adams throw is an absolute perfect example of that. But they do need some easier offense, and I think eventually they'll get to that. You'll get them a little more in rhythm. Lane Taylor will become more comfortable. Jared Cook will be more involved, things of that nature. But the story of the day really at the end was the defense making a crucial stop. And that means, obviously, the Packers had to get a stop to preserve the game. It was 27-23. The Jaguars got the ball. They converted a fourth down here or there. And then they get it to where it's 4th-and-1, and they're inside the red zone and really at the point in the game where there's time left, but not a lot. And in order for the Packers to win, they would have to get a third Hail Mary in 2 seasons, and that just doesn't seem likely. But ultimately, it was 4th-and-1. The Jaguars threw a bubble screen to Allen Hurns, Micah Hyde, Demaryius Randall, and ultimately Joe Thomas, who really had a sneaky good game. Joe Thomas blew it up. And by blowing it up, he really saved the Packers' bacon there. And the Packers win the game because of it. And that's how the game ended. Packers kneel out the clock. So a big play there at the end. The other thing really to mention is Clay Matthews, back on the edge, was a terror. He had a sack, tied Reggie White for sacks as a Packer. He had a couple tackles for loss. Clay Matthews is a good inside linebacker, but he's special on the edge. And that's what the Packers need him to be, is special. And he was that today. Adam, I'll start with you here. What are your thoughts in general? Because I know, at least on Twitter, and forgive me for basing my thought here on a potential tweet, but on Twitter, Clay Matthews can be a little bit of a hot-button issue because he's missed some games in the past. You know, he wasn't on the field in the NFC Championship game a few years ago. Some fans don't necessarily like him too much, but what are your thoughts in general? Because now Clay Matthews is just 7 sacks away from passing Kabir Gabaja Biamila as the all-time leader in sacks for the Green Bay Packers. So what are your thoughts on him?
Matthews is so good that I think we expect him to get 10 sacks a game. And when he doesn't, we get mad at him for some reason. Matthews is the least of my worries on the defense. My main worry is just getting more of a consistent pass rush from other players, a Nick Perry, a Julius Peppers, or whoever. If the Packers can get that, I think this defense is a top-5 defense. They're really fast. They're really athletic. They swarm. They have some tackling issues, but that's to be expected early in the season. But Matthews, I have no worries about him. If I did worry about something, like I said, it'd be finding someone else to consistently rush the passer with Matthews. And if they get that, oof, watch out. I think this defense is going to be really, really good.
I agree, and I've said it more times than I care to remember. From a fan side of things, Clay Matthews is my favorite player. Over Aaron Rodgers, over Jordy Nelson, you name your guy, Clay Matthews is my favorite player.
It's the hair, isn't it, Jacob?
It's got to be the hair. I love the blonde hair. But I don't know. I just tend to like defensive players that are terrors. My all-time favorite Packer is Reggie White. After that, it's Charles Woodson. You know, there's just a lot of guys that seem to be on the defensive side of the ball, which is interesting because for my entire life, the Packers have been an offensive-based team. So that's interesting nonetheless, but I thought he was great today. I can't complain one bit with the way he played in his return to the edge. But I do agree with you, Adam. The Packers are looking for another guy. Today, that other guy looked to be Dayton Jones, although it wasn't overly consistent. Nick Perry made a couple plays. Julius Peppers, though, was noticeably invisible, both on the field and on the stat sheet. His snap count, I'll have to look. It wasn't very high, but there were full series going by where Peppers wasn't on the field. Jason, I want to go to you here before we get to the secondary, but do you have concerns about this guy going forward? Because, you know, I know you look at him, and Julius Peppers is the most impressive human being I have ever witnessed up close and personal. Big, long arms, big ears, fast. I mean, he just looks like he was created in a lab. But Father Time is undefeated, and do you think maybe that's catching up to him a little bit?
With regards to Peppers, I thought about this actually as I was watching the game, and he's on a snap count. So let's just get used to the fact that Julius Peppers is not an every down guy anymore. The Packers aren't going to use him heavily. They may towards the back end of the season, and they may also ratchet up his snaps at the end of games. But he's aging. He's not as fast as he used to be, maybe not as effective as he used to be. So these are the things that happen when guys get towards the back end of their career. Not all of them, but most of them, and it's tough because Peppers is a Hall of Fame caliber player, and it's hard to watch a guy like that diminish in his role and his abilities. We've seen it happen so many times before, and then there's the fact that we're Packers fans, and so it's even more difficult from that standpoint. I'm not concerned because I think this is what the Packers probably knew they had in Peppers and what they expected from him. I don't think it's a big surprise. So didn't see anything noteworthy from him today. Don't expect him to light up at any point this season. I think he's going to become an important role player and a veteran presence on that team, and maybe his value is going to be more in just his silent leadership style and what he can provide on a couple plays here and there. You know, I think by the time the season's over with, his sack total is definitely going to be in single digits and his splash play count the same. But I think that's enough for the Packers to get by. I saw, like you said, you mentioned some other areas of the defense. I saw enough other guys step up today that I don't have any concern. I think Julius Peppers will contribute where he can, and anything the Packers can get from him really is kind of gravy.
So gravy is what Jason Perrone thinks about Julius Peppers' production. I, for one, I have a little bit of concern just because, you know, this is a guy, and I know this was 2 years ago, this is a guy they brought in to be kind of the other guy that Adam mentioned, the Robin to Clay Matthews' Batman, if you will. And while I do like Nick Perry and I do like Dayton Jones' potential production, I picked him as my breakout player. Julius Peppers is the only other proven pass rusher on this roster on the edge. So the Packers are going to need him to make some plays down the stretch. Now, the other thing to give a little bit of hope is it seems like in Peppers' Packers career, it's been kind of a slowish start. He gets hot in the middle, early quarter to middle of the season. He disappears for a while and then has a strong December. So if he has a strong December, January, and hopefully February, then the Packers will be just fine. But for today, definitely not a good game for Julius Peppers. But overall, I thought the pass rush was okay, but they do need a little bit more consistency. Maybe, and I hate to use this reason, but maybe some of it had to do with the heat and the defensive line being worn down. But nonetheless, the other part of the game was the secondary, obviously, the Jaguars. They have those two big receivers. They have Julius Thomas, a tight end. They have some weapons. Kind of up and down. I thought Sam Shields played really well, considering his assignment with Allen Robinson, and Allen Robinson is very good. He got away with a holding penalty for sure down in the red zone, but those tend to even themselves out, and they did because they missed one on Jordy Nelson later in the game as well. But Sam Shields played okay. Demarius Randall had some good moments. And Quentin Rollins, my guy, Quentin Rollins, was, for lack of a better term, terrible. He really struggled. Especially there was a drive where he gave a touchdown to Julius Thomas. There was a big completion earlier in the game for that. You know, the secondary is supposed to be the strength of this team, and today it certainly wasn't. Now, they made enough plays to win the game, but Adam, do you have any concerns about this group going forward?
Not really. Yeah, Rollins had a couple of misplays today, but I thought that touchdown to Julius Thomas was just a really nice throw and catch. He had pretty good coverage there, and I just love the athleticism I'm seeing from the secondary. I mean, Demarius Randall is all over the place. Morgan Burnett is all over. Ha-ha Clinton Dix is flying around. I just like the raw physical talent. And if you get players like Rollins and Randall some more games under their belt, they're only going to get better if they can stay healthy, you would think. So I just see this this secondary as having a decent day today, but I think they're only going to go up from here just because they have so much raw physical talent, in my opinion.
They do, and Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, you mentioned him. I forgot to, and I can't believe I did, because he arguably made the play of the game. Big pass down the middle of the field. Breaks it up from Allen Robinson. That would have set the Jaguars up first and 10, or first and goal probably from about the 9-yard line. And, you know, the Packers, Clinton Dix makes the play, and because he did, the Packers, that helped him win the game. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff you're looking for Clinton Dix this year, is to be the star. And, you know, that's what I think he can be, and that's what I think he's going to trend up toward. But nice first step for him today as well. Jason, we talked before the show. You have a discussion, by the way, your injury for the game. The only one of note, unless I missed one, is Sam Shields was being evaluated for a concussion. So with that in mind, Jason, that kind of segues perfectly into what you wanted to discuss. So what are your thoughts on the Sam Shields?
Well, before we get into that, I want to ask either of you guys, Jacob, I don't know if you have an update on it. I thought I saw Nick Perry kind of kneeling down towards the end of the game. Did he come back in, or do we have any update on him?
I have yet to see anything, but I will look into that right now.
Okay. I haven't seen anything either, and typically you see some at least some speculation. So, yeah, the Sam Shields potential concussion, and this is the second one if it is a concussion, and even if it's not, I mean, he has concussion-like symptoms, so you might as well err on the side of safety and assume that he has one. Now, this is the second time in a year that Shields has had this issue, and if it is a concussion, it's his fourth over the course of his career. This is his seventh season, so that's a lot of hits to the head. Jacob, you made a good point when we were talking earlier. If Aaron Rodgers gets another one, it would be his third that we know about. And, you know, the rules have changed a little bit on the reporting of concussion issues, but Sam Shields just seems to have this problem a lot. And if it's not a concussion, it's something else. He doesn't play 16 games. The Packers are without him for some time, and that's football. It's a physical sport, and there's not a lot of players who do play 16 games. So I'm not bagging on Shields for not being available. But these types of things just continue to rack up and happen. He's such an important part of the defense. The Packers count on him quite a bit. I just think at this point, his age, the concussions, the conditions, all these things are kind of building up to the point where if I'm the Packers, I'm going to start maybe wanting to get some of the guys that are behind him on the depth chart up and ready and get some more time in during practice and possibly even take some more reps during the week. I mean, I know that's very hot take-ish. Sam Shields is their best corner. They're arguably their best defensive back, although I think by the end of the season, HaHa Clinton Dix will have taken over that role or that particular, you know, moniker. So it's one of those age versus injury history versus they've got all these defensive backs that they kept on the roster. They've got all these extra safeties, all these extra corners. I mean, Hawkins was out today. He was inactive. But if he's back and ready to go, I'm not saying you throw a rookie in there and they can just take over where Sam Shields picked up. You can't teach speed, and Sam Shields has an incredible talent of speed. I mean, Jacob, you remember we were at the Kansas City game last year, and Macklin caught a ball on a slant, and nobody could catch him. He was streaking down the sidelines, and Sam Shields ran, I mean, in probably record time from the 50-yard line and chased him down and caught him out of bounds. So, I mean, he's a great talent. He's a great corner. I'm just saying, I think the Packers, you know, you don't want to get caught in a situation where Shields is hurt. He's really out. I mean, he missed over a month last year after that concussion against the Cowboys. That was a terrible injury. So as these things pile up, you assume that he's going to miss at least one game, or maybe not. I don't know. It's the NFL. It's the Packers. Who knows? I mean, if he can play, great. I love Sam Shields. I have nothing against him at all. I mean, if he's healthy and he can be out there, I want Sam Shields out there. I just think the Packers need to start thinking plan B here because these things rack up, and if it's truly a head injury, you got to get some of these younger guys ready. We saw Ladarius Gunter out there today. Didn't look great. I don't know if he was necessarily put in the best position. Quentin Rollins struggled on that drive, the first touchdown drive the Jaguars had. He looked awful. Had a special teams issue as well, so he did not have a great day today. I thought Demaryius Randle played pretty well, but it's about preparation and it's about depth. You know, I mean, we get to the end of the season, we're going to start talking about how deep is this Packers team, because that's what's going to get them to the magical part of January and hopefully early February is the depth, because it's a fact. Guys are going to miss games, guys are going to get hurt. Sam Shields just seems to be one of those guys. So I know that I'm pointing to history and I'm saying, oh, it's going to happen again without any other fact or medical knowledge. I'm certainly not a doctor, but I just think the Packers might want to start thinking a little bit long term. And I know that goes against the grain also because he just signed that large contract and he's making a lot of money. So the Packers stand to lose a lot if Sam Shields were to not play as much or not be available in both facets in terms of his production on the field and in the money that they're paying him right now. So it's tough, but that's kind of my, you know, my hot take of the day is maybe it's time to get some of these guys ready for Shields should he miss more time and just expect that it may happen again at some point down the road this season.
Interesting stuff there. One other thing you mentioned was Ladarius Gunter, and, you know, the one thing that I kept talking about was they kept playing him in the slot, and I trust the Packers coaching staff for the most part, but they just do some things that don't make sense to me And one of them is putting guys in positions where they don't belong. Don Barclay at tackle last year comes to mind. This year, it seems for the first week at least, Ladarius Gunter in the slot. And Ladarius Gunter is a player that belongs on the boundary, and you're going to need to help him against speed receivers. But he can play the boundary, and he's pretty good at it. But he can't play the slot. And I think that's been made clear over the last two seasons. But one other thing on the defense. First interception of the season, I want to know, either one of you, did either one of you have Joe Thomas as your bet for the first interception of the year?
Oh, of course
I did not.
I called it a long time. No, I didn't. I'm just kidding.
Okay, so none of us had that. But if you had Joe Thomas as first interception on the Packers, I'm sure you won a bunch of money if you bet in Vegas, which in no way do I ever condone, just the wagering, friendly wagering of jelly beans amongst friends. But no
you
gambling
know, to
whatsoever.
To be totally honest, Thomas made that pick, and then I saw Thomas on the back of his jersey, and I was like, I thought he got cut. So it's a good thing that the Packers didn't cut Joe Thomas.
For today, it surely seems that way. And Joe Thomas really had a pretty good game. I mean, he had the interception. He finished up the tackle on the last play of the game that ultimately won it for the Packers. So, you know, that's kind of those things that go unnoticed, but how you win a lot of games in the NFL, some of those role players making plays that you didn't expect them to. So that was one for sure with Joe Thomas today. He's your unsung hero, which brings me to the ticket king of the game, our star of the game, a game ball, whatever way you want to put it. But Ticket King is our new sponsor this year. Like I've mentioned before, it's right down the street. Go in, grab your tickets, go in, cheer on the Pack, and we'll do this every week. King of the game for me, the Claymaker. Clay Matthews had a sack, a couple tackles for loss. He was all over the place. I thought he had a really good day in his return to the edge. He definitely made it clear. He thought he was an outside linebacker today. He proved he was an outside linebacker. He was an awesome pass rusher for the Packers today. Made some big plays early in the game to help get the Packers a lead that they would not eventually relinquish. My ticket king of the game is Clay Matthews. Adam, I know this is new to you, but who is your ticket king of the game?
Jeff Janis. No, just kidding. You know, he had that penalty at the end, but I'm going to ignore that for now, and I'm going to go with Morgan Burnett. I like what he did, kind of playing closer to the line as kind of this hybrid safety linebacker type. He had a couple of nice pass rushes, some nice tackles in the running game, and just overall I thought was really flying around and kind of being the leader of that secondary. So Clay Matthews played great. I'm not going to argue with that pick at all, but I'm going to kind of go a different direction and say Morgan Burnett.
Morgan Burnett, one of my guys, actually a jersey that I own because I thought he was just going to be a star. It turns out I was wrong. He's not a star, but still one of those indispensable kind of players in the secondary. So I've got Clay Matthews. Adam has Morgan Burnett. Jason, finish us off. Who's your ticket king of the game?
Okay, so Jacob, do we want to implement a rule for ticket king of the game that it cannot be Aaron Rodgers this season, or is he still eligible?
Oh, he's absolutely still eligible. If you want to pick Aaron Rodgers because of that throw to Devontae Adams, I'm game.
So Aaron Rodgers will be co-ticket king of the game with Devontae Adams then, because that throw and the catch subsequent after the throw itself, I mean, to be honest with you, if I had to pick one of the two, I'm going to go with Rodgers. He had the nice run for a touchdown. His mobility is still there, which is something that, you know, as Packers fans every season, we kind of wonder, is this the year that we're finally going to see it diminish? Doesn't look like it. Looks like he's done a good job of taking care of himself, keeping himself healthy. So overall, I thought he had a good day. It was pretty accurate. Some issues with the clock management, again, which I don't know if we're going to talk about at some point, but which I put on, you know, a little bit on McCarthy, a little bit on Rodgers. But that throw and catch for the touchdown was incredible. Adams only had three catches today, but hey, you know, to see him kind of buck the trend, he did have that drop on third down. It was a deep third down ball that I think he should have caught. I think he missed time to jump. I mean, I think he gets inside of his own head and is his worst enemy. But to come back and make a grab like that and had a couple other nice catch and runs was a very good thing to say. So I'm going with Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams, co-ticket kings of the game. Easy for me to say, right?
So Jason goes with the easy one, Aaron Rodgers. Hail to the king, Aaron Rodgers, king of quarterbacks, and he definitely looked more like himself today than last year's version for sure. And yes, we will get into clock management and actually do that right now. And I'll let Adam do that before we let him go as well. But it's asinine how it seems like the Packers make a big play, and without fail, the next one, the play clock's down to 2-1, or they're using the timeout. Their last possession on offense today was embarrassing. They call a timeout. They come out of the timeout and try to call another one, which you cannot do. And they get a delay of game penalty that ultimately cost them a first down. I know Rodgers skipped the throw to Nelson on the next play, but 3rd and 4 is a little easier than 3rd and 9. And that's just unacceptable for a team that is as well coached as Mike McCarthy coaches up the Packers, as good of a quarterback as Aaron Rodgers is. It's just not acceptable. And it drives me crazy. And my friends make fun of me for how many pre-snap timeouts they use and how upset I get about it. But it's true. And I watched the other night, it cost the Carolina Panthers maybe the game. I mean, you don't know. They used all their timeouts before they needed to use them. So it's ridiculous, and I hate it, and I got really nothing else to say on that. Adam, what's your thought process real quick here on the Packers' clock management late in today's game?
It kind of gets back to that whole rhythm thing about the offense. You know, call a play, get up to the line, run the play. And do it in rhythm. Again, that might sound like I'm kind of old school, fuddy duddy, not with the times of, you know, making adjustments and audibly at the line of scrimmage. I'm not saying never audible or never make any changes, but you have to have, you know, sometimes you just got to call the play, get up to the line, and run it, and trust your talent. And I think that gets in the way sometimes. Rodgers and McCarthy are always looking for that perfect matchup to exploit, or that perfect play against this defense or that defense. And sometimes that can lead to confusion and weird stuff like what we saw today.
All kinds of stuff there. Adam, I want to thank you for coming on to today's show. Obviously, you are welcome anytime. Jason and I both obviously extend our hopes, prayers, et cetera, with you. We hope that you continue to fight this disease and, you know, get where you need to be so you can watch more games with your wife and your 2 kids. But before I let you go, let us know, where can we find you and where can we find your wife's page to kind of keep up with how you're doing?
Sure. Well, first off, thanks to you guys for all the support during this whole ordeal, especially you, Jason. You've been really great and, you know, helping me out and offering some words of encouragement, things like that. I really appreciate it. And just everyone out there who reads my stuff at Cheesehead TV and makes a comment here and there, kind of encouraging me and spurring me along. I really can't say thank you enough. It really means a lot. And as far as following along, you can follow me on Twitter at Adam Check. I also have a Caring Bridge page where me or my wife post most of my health updates. And also you can read my Packers stuff over at cheeseheadtv.com.
Thank you guys. Adam, appreciate having you on here. Sorry for the delay here. I'm watching the end of the Colts and Lions here, and this is getting...
The Lions pulled this one out of nowhere.
This is getting a little... Colts are literally in their own end zone.
Yep, they're doing the whole rope-a-dope
thing. They have lost far more ground than they have gained, and now it goes out of the end zone. So that is one of the weirdest endings I have ever seen. But Adam, I want to thank you for giving us some of your time. And, you know, there's a lot of us rooting for you, and we appreciate you coming out and giving us what little time I know that you have. Take care of those kids. Take care of everything else. And then hopefully we can have you back on after another Packers victory.
Will do, guys. Thanks again.
Thanks, Adam.
That is Adam Check, our guy. As I said, we've had him on now for the first time, and we appreciate having him. We hope to have him again soon. So kind of a perfect segue with the way that ended. I want to go around the division. And, you know, I just mentioned the Lions. They won the game 39-35, and, you know, kind of a weird finish. Andrew Luck throws a touchdown pass with a minute left. Matthew Stafford leads the drive down the field. Get the field goal to win it, so the Lions are 1-0. The Minnesota Vikings had a weird game. They beat the Tennessee Titans because the Titans couldn't hold on to the ball. The Vikings offense looked atrocious, which is probably to be expected without Sam Bradford. or well, without Sam Bradford and without Teddy Bridgewater, more specifically. Sam Bradford did not start today. Adrian Peterson didn't do anything of note. The Vikings got two touchdowns from their defense, and that's why they won the game. And the Chicago Bears, they lost to the Houston Texans, and they looked okay in the first half, but their second half was horrible. They could not block. They were getting pressure from all over the middle of their line, the outside of their line. Their right tackle is atrocious. When the Packers go in to play those guys, I expect him to be a focal point of their defensive scheme for the pass rush. But so at the end of the day, you have three teams that are 1-0, and two of those 1-0 teams will face off next week when the Packers invade U.S. Bank Stadium to take on the Minnesota Vikings, and we're going to preview that real quick. The key to the game on offense is what I want to start with, and my key to the game for the Packers on offense is stay on the field on third down. The Vikings defense is very good, and that's how they're going to win the game. They're going to try and wear the Packers down on offense with Adrian Peterson, and they're going to try and get after Aaron Rodgers and hit him. And, you know, they've done some good things against the Packers the last couple of years, but I still think it's a defense that can be had. Titans ran the ball okay today. I think you can get Eddie Lacy with some stuff. And maybe next week is the week where the Packers can maybe get the ball down the field. Harrison Smith is as good as it gets. Xavier Rhodes is a good corner, but the other parts of the Vikings secondary is able to be exploited. I think that that is something that the Packers will look to. But my key to the game on offense really centers around third down, and they were pretty good on third down today. They need to be good again next week. Jason, what's your key to the game for the Packers offense?
Well, if I can, before I get into that, because I know that Adam just dropped off, and I didn't want to overdo it or put him on the spot. You know, Adam, I've had several conversations with him, and as most of you guys know, you know, I lost my dad last year to pancreatic cancer. So his cause and everything that he's going through right now is pretty near and dear, and also from the standpoint of that he's a colleague of mine over at Cheesehead TV and, you know, really kind of helped me come along from back in the days when I started at allgbp.com with Jersey Al and just getting me on board and up to speed with writing and some of the standards and the do's and the don'ts. And so I always kind of, you know, appreciate Adam for that. But his battle and everything that he's gone through is very well documented. If you follow him on Twitter or on Facebook or on the Caring Bridge, and he talked about his surgery, and I mean, everything but the kitchen sink was removed from his midsection to try to help fight this. And the man just, and Jacob, I'm sure you would agree too, he sounded like he did 2 years ago before any of this was a thing. I mean, the man's spirit cannot be broken. He's got an incredible support system at home. His wife, Julie, is unbelievable. She's amazing. I met her at an event that they did for Adam's benefit a few months ago shortly after I moved to the Twin Cities. So I was fortunate to get to go to that and support Adam there. And, you know, now he's got his second son, his family is growing. It is not, you know, he's got everything in his favor in terms of the attitude, the support, and everything else that goes on. And I didn't want to gush too much with him there because, you know, Adam's a little bit more of a private guy, but so good to hear him sounding like himself before I get into anything else. I just wanted to acknowledge that. And that's one of the reasons why I've been such a big supporter of Adam and following him closely. So thoughts and prayers always with him and his family. Now, as far as the next week goes and the Vikings game, I think Minnesota knows that offensively they have to figure some things out without their main quarterback. They looked okay today, and they did it with defense. So they're going to come with pressure next week, and the Vikings tackle very well. So the Packers have to try to find a way to gain some extra yards against the defense that just doesn't give them up. They're very opportunistic. If you make a mistake, they will make you pay for it. The Packers have to be much more sound on offense than they were today from a clock management, from a ball control standpoint. If they're going to run the no huddle, they've got to have everything on point against that defense because Teddy Bridgewater may be out. They might be a little down and out in the offensive category. And Adrian Peterson was not great today in Tennessee, although I didn't watch any of the highlights or anything to see what Tennessee did to kind of scheme for him. But it's all about the Packers' ability to score points because they're going to need to put up a bunch. I don't necessarily think that Minnesota's offense is going to light up the Green Bay defense, but that middle of the field today, and seemingly since God was a small child, is always open against the Packers. The Vikings are going to find ways to exploit it. They've got weapons on offense. They've got weapons that Peterson can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's a great running back. You got all these receivers. You got Kyle Rudolph. The Packers cover tight ends about as well as I have no clever comparison and cliche. So to me, it's all about execution, and it's all about getting those extra yards and finding a way to, like you said, Jacob, to stay on the field, make Minnesota's defense work, because towards the end of the game, the Packers were able to find some more offensive success or at least control the ball because Jacksonville started to get gassed. It was a different situation, obviously, being there in the Florida heat. The temperature was a lot hotter, and they're going to be inside in a temperature-controlled environment next week. But football is football. You get those guys gassed, you kind of break their spirit a little bit. I at least liked what I saw from the Packers offense today, that I have no qualms about their ability to come out and get a victory next week. But they're going to have to play a pretty clean game of football. Obviously, no turnovers. But to me, it's all about getting those extra yards. Jacob, you mentioned third down. That's definitely an obvious one that they need in order to sustain drives. I think as they continue to click with their offense, it was good to see them finally get a ball to Jared Cook. I think Jared Cook might have a bigger week next week than he did this week. That's just a hunch. And you mentioned Xavier Rhodes. Rhodes didn't play today, so I don't know if his injury is long-term and if he's going to be available next week or not. That could become a thing. The Vikings secondary has Harrison Smith. He's one of the best safeties in the game, but like you said, they can be had. And so I think if the Packers have a good game plan coming in, and man, those clock issues that they had, we already talked about, those kind of things can't happen. If they clean that up, I think they got a great shot. They're going to be looking good come a week from now.
To go with Xavier Rhodes there, apparently he was a late scratch today with a knee injury and said he woke up this morning and it wasn't feeling right. So whatever that means, I don't know if that's a long-term injury or not, but that is the situation with Xavier Rhodes, and that's really the Packers' offense and defense. I don't think this is too difficult. I think some people during the week will try and get a little cute and maybe tell you that the key is something different, but I don't think it's that difficult. It's pretty clear to me at this point, whether it's Sam Bradford or Sean Hill or some guy, if they pull Brett Favre out of retirement, whatever. The key to this game is stop Adrian Peterson on defense. It's very similar to when the Vikings had Christian Ponder and all them other bums they had at quarterback over the years. It's just that simple. It's stop Peterson, you stop the Vikings. So that's what the Packers have to do. They did a good job today against the run, but this is a different test next week against the Minnesota Vikings and Adrian Peterson specifically, who is, legal matters aside, one of the greatest running backs and maybe the greatest running back I've ever seen play in his prime. Again, remember, Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith, those guys were a little older by the time I saw them. Well, Barry Sanders wasn't older, but I was young. Emmitt Smith was older by the time I had figured out what the hell was going on during a football game. And I still don't know that I know what the hell is going on during a football game. But nonetheless, it's pretty simple. Stop Peterson, you stop the Vikings. So that's my key to the game on defense. Nothing too special there. Jason, what do you got?
Jacob, I don't know what happens on our platform, but every once in a while I lose the audio. So I only caught the first part of what you said there. So I apologize. If that was a question or a setup, I'm not sure what the topic was.
The key to the game on defense for the Packers is what?
Got it. Okay, so I still think you got to stop Adrian Peterson. I think it seemed like the Packers focused on stopping the run today and wanted to make Jacksonville throw. Well, Jacksonville was ready to throw. Allen Robinson, the middle of the field, Blake Bortles maybe is growing up right before our eyes, and so maybe that turned out to be not the best game plan on earth. But I still think the Packers need to go in looking to stop Adrian Peterson, because whether it's Sean Hill or Sam Bradford, Bradford doesn't have a lot of time in this offense, and Sean Hill's not going to light things up. I do think the Packers' secondary is going to come around and be fantastic. Ha-ha Clinton Dix looked like a man today. Almost had an interception were it not for the penalty. I just think they're primed to do some really good things. If it's going to come down to the arm of one of those Minnesota quarterbacks, they've got a dearth of talent at wide receiver and pass catchers. But you stop Adrian Peterson, and I think that's just going to open up way too many opportunities for that secondary. The pass rush would be a close second. I don't think they got home enough today against Jacksonville. They're going to have to find a way to get home in creative ways. You know, it's about winning matchups one-on-one up front, and I just didn't see enough of those guys winning matchups. I think the Packers still have to kind of scheme their way to the quarterback, and that's something that offenses can easily adjust to and make adjustments and game around, and then all of a sudden, yeah, the guy's coming up the middle. It's one of Don Capers' exotic blitz packages, but, okay, we've got the perfect answer for it, and there's a guy sitting out in the flat, and he's left alone, and there isn't anybody within 25 yards of him. So those are the kind of things the Packers need. They need to start winning one-on-one matchups up front and get to the quarterback out doing anything fancy. Otherwise, come later this season, everyone's going to have Green Bay figured out, and it's going to be a tough road to put pressure on the passer, which is something that obviously is going to lead to a lot of success if the Packers want to be successful. So that'd be a close second. Stop the run, pressure on the quarterbacks.
Pretty basic stuff there, and that's, you know, what you come here for is, I kid, but, I mean, really, next week's game, it seems like it is pretty simple. Stop Peterson, pressure whatever mo they put out there at quarterback. So we'll see who that is as the week progresses. One final thing before we get to close out here is that the game pick, obviously. Next week's game, it'll be a 7:30 kickoff, so you'll be waiting all day for Sunday night. And to see the Packers take on a division rival that stole their division title from them last year, they were opening up a new stadium, or they are opening up a new stadium. The Packers have a chance to ruin that festivity on Sunday night. But before the season started on our preview show a week ago, I picked the Packers to win the game. I didn't see anything today to vastly make me change my mind. I think that the Packers are a better football team than the Vikings, especially with Teddy Bridgewater being out. I think they're a better football team than the Vikings with Teddy Bridgewater. I think the offense clicks a little more next week. I think you see a little more in sync, in rhythm, a better offensive line, a better running game, a better passing game, and I think you'll see ultimately a better defense as well. I think the Packers win this game. It'll be tight. It'll be contested. One of those games that gets your heart a-pumping. I think the Packers win 23-20 over the Minnesota Vikings. Jason, what you got?
How about an overtime thriller to open up U.S. Bank Stadium here in the Twin Cities? I'm feeling a 27-21. The Packers get a little bit of a monkey off their back and finally win an overtime game under Mike McCarthy. I do think it's going to be another tight battle. You know, we're all waiting for the offensive juggernaut game where Aaron Rodgers is sitting by the middle of the third quarter and the return of the 2014 offense and all those great things. I don't think this is the week it's going to happen. Great quarterback for the Vikings or not. So it's another close one. But the Packers hold the opponent under 30. I think they've always got a decent chance to win. So I'm going to call an overtimer. 27-21, Packers. I'm thinking maybe Cobb. Somebody slips on a coverage, Cobb's open underneath, scampers into the end zone for the game winner.
I was just going to ask that. Who gets the game winner then? So you got Randall Cobb with the game winner. We both have the Packers winning, and that will do it for today's show. Victory Sunday, Monday, whatever day you're listening, it's a victory day. The Packers beat the Jaguars 27-23. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter, at PackerPulse. You can follow me personally. I am at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason. He is at Jason Perrone. Send us questions, comments, concerns. Had some good interaction with some of you guys today during the game. I always tend to appreciate those kinds of things, so send it our way. We will be more than happy to interact with you during, before, after the game, whatever the case may be. Great to hear from you guys today. I want to thank again Adam Check for coming onto the show. Adam, we appreciate it, and he gave you some information on where to follow him. You can follow him at Adam Check. You can find his Caring Bridge page. Help support him as he battles this horrendous disease of cancer. And I want to end the show again. Thank you to police officers, firefighters, military people. Again, without you guys keeping us safe, there is no football to watch on Sundays. And there is no safely watching games or safely doing something as simple as running through the yard with your son or, you know, whatever the case is. Without you guys, none of this is possible. So thank you all for all that you do. And thank you guys, our listeners, for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the PAX Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at TicketKing.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.